This is Her Story
with Kathy Romano
on 95.7 Ben FM.
Welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. Today's guest is a Middletown Township police officer. She's the community resource officer and handles everything from car seat installation to SWAT team negotiator. Officer Melissa Robison's main focus has been educating schools and businesses about active shooter responses. And she's here today to tell us her story. Officer Robison, thanks for coming by.
You're welcome.
You have a military background.
I do. I've been in the Pennsylvania Army National Guard for 16 and a half years. My job is chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear explosive device specialist. Sounds fancy. We set up basically a human car wash. We can find the levels of contamination from nuclear, radiological, biological hazards. And we have decon, recon platoons. And I've been doing that for almost 17 years.
That's very interesting. You did a tour in Iraq.
I did, from 2007 to 2008. Over there, we were mostly military police. We did a lot of convoy operations. We did air convoys. We did a QRF, which is a quick reactionary force. If something happens outside the wire, we can go out and pick up the people. We did prisoner transports through the air and on ground, resupply missions. So all different kinds of jobs over there.
So how was it for you when you got back?
It was crazy. You definitely learn to enjoy every single moment. You enjoy the little things, like taking a shower without shoes on was pretty epic. And the smell was much better over here.
Oh, really?
The smell over there is just one you can never forget.
Like what? What do you mean?
They don't have sewage treatment, so it's okay. Like they burn everything.
Okay.
Like everything. And the smell of that combined with all of the diesel fuel and just it's disgusting. And so getting used to being back home was it was tough at first. I mean, because everything that you see on the side of the road that normally would throw your senses up, you know, it's like it's just a jug. It's just trash. You know, we're over there. You're thinking, is that going to be the water bottle that kills me? Is that not? So that was pretty difficult getting back. But that's kind of what started me on my journey to be a police officer. And it's worked out great. So
you started in the military and then came back and went to the police academy?
I did. Yeah, I went to I actually joined the military on September 11, 2001. Not on purpose. It just happened.
It just happened to be that day.
It was just by coincidence.
Wow.
Yeah, we got evacuated from the building and everything in the middle of me swearing in. So it was pretty wild. You know, you had to go back a few different times to swear in a couple different times to make sure that you really didn't want to do it. And so, yeah, I was there, you know, right out of high school. And then once I came back from Iraq, it was, yeah, the police academy and try to see if I could make this a career.
You currently work in Bucks County for Middletown Township Police Department. How long have you been there?
For 3 years.
Where were you before that?
Warminster for 5 years.
You're currently the community resource officer for the township. What exactly are your responsibilities?
There's a lot. I'm kind of the catch-all, but any kind of community need, any kind of class or the public wants to reach out about. I mean, I've given everything from talks about bullying and sexting to car seat installations. We do something called Car Fit for the elderly. So it's kind of a way to re-acclimate them to cars that might be newer to them.
You'll teach them the whole computer system inside a new car?
Yes. Oh yep. Like what the buttons do. I mean, you'd be surprised how many elderly people have no idea that their seatbelt will adjust to them. And they don't wear it because they can't figure out how to make it not choke them.
Oh, wow.
So little things like that. I am on a bunch of different boards and committees. The Middletown Community Foundation is a huge one. They're a nonprofit and they raise tons of money for the community, for Neshaminy students, but also for the police department. They, in fact, bought us a canine last year. They're going to be buying us another canine this year. They help me with some of the programs that I run, Shop with a Cop being the biggest one. I run National Night Out every year. And in fact, I'll be heading to the schools next year for the next school year as the school resource officer.
So what's Shop with a Cop?
Shop with a Cop is...
That sounds like something I'd do.
You would totally do it. And I love it because it's at Target.
Yes, of course. Perfect.
Yes, it's all day long at Target. And so basically, I run the different events throughout the year. And every single dime that we collect goes to Shop with a Cop. And we will find kids, whether it's through school counselors, principals, teachers, private submissions. And these are kids who might have an ill parent, ill sibling, somebody might be deployed, or basically they just have a financial burden that their holiday season is going to be pretty much non-existent. So we will give each child at least $100 to go shopping at Target. They get paired up with a police officer. They have a list. They get to really discover the joys of giving to other people because they're not shopping for themselves. So it's shopping for family and friends, and we will provide them breakfast and snacks and activities. But then, of course, we don't let any of the kids leave empty-handed. And whether the cop's pulling out their credit card or we're just handing them extra cash, the kid's going to get something. This year, we were incredibly lucky. We had people standing waiting for us at the checkout lines just to hand me money. So I was able to go up to the kids and say, hey, pick something off the candy rack. And just that silly little thing, they're like, I never get to get candy off the candy rack. So it was awesome to be able to do that kind of stuff. But we're always looking, well, I'm always looking to make it bigger. My chief is like, you know, we can't keep shopping all day. I'm like, yes, we can.
Yes, we can. There's
it's
no
Target.
Limit
they never run out. That's yeah. the beauty of Target. There's always something there.
Well, and it seems like it's a great opportunity for police and the community to build a relationship.
Absolutely. That's a huge part of it because the kids are off with the police officers all by themselves. It's not mom, dad, grandma, grandpa tagging along. It's them. They're together. They're budgeting their money. They're making decisions together. And it's really a bonding experience for kids who might not have had a great experience with us, or maybe their parents hadn't. Whatever the situation is, it's a way for us to just be one-on-one with them, talk to them, hang out with them for a while, and share an event like that.
I know there's more serious situations with children that are involved, but it always bothers me when I hear a parent say, stop doing that or I'm going to call the police. Do you
yes,
ever?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you get that?
Yes, and I will correct parents.
I don't ever want my son's six. I don't ever want him to think that you guys are bad. You're not going to not put your toys away and I'm going to call the police.
That's absolutely so true. We do not like that when parents, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to call the police. And we're standing right there. I'm like, no, you're not. You know, that's not it. But it is very nice to be respectful of your mom. And that's an opportunity for us to kind of talk to the kid like, hey, what's going on? Like, why are you and your mom not getting along? You know, no, it's not a police matter, but it's just an opportunity to chit chat with them and then also talk to the parents like, hey, please don't put us in that bad guy light. You know, we don't want to be the bad guy. We want them to always run to us no matter what the situation is. We certainly don't want them to ever run away from us and be fearful that we're going to take them away because they didn't brush their teeth at night.
Yeah, of course. And view you as the bad guys.
Right.
In my township, they brought some police officers and a canine out to my son's birthday party last year.
We haven't had any requests for birthday parties, but we've definitely had a bunch of cops go out and play street football, hockey, basketball. During summertime, when it gets warmer, we're on bike patrol. So we'll go out and scope out who's got gym time when, who's playing the best game when, and we'll go hit them up. Absolutely. I mean, we love being in the schools anyway. So if they're playing a game of dodgeball or something like that, yeah, we'll be out there playing.
And you're a mom yourself.
Yeah, I have two and I'm working on number three.
Third coming.
Yep. I have a boy and a girl.
And do you know what you're having now?
A boy.
Another boy. Okay. Yep.
This is it though.
Okay.
This is it.
Speaking of kids, you do car seat installation. What are
yes.
some easy tips that people should know about car seats?
Well, the law changed a couple of years ago that children have to be rear facing at least till 2 years old.
Which seems a little crazy. I feel like their legs are going to be up by their ears if they're rear facing at two.
A lot of people say that. They say, they're bending their knees. Well, don't you bend your knees to sit in your seat?
Okay.
So everyone's bending knees. That's okay. Knees are meant to be bent. But it's the safest way for them to ride because if you are in an accident, it'll cradle their whole neck much, much better than if they're forward facing. So you can keep them rear facing until they max out the weight and height limits of the seat, which I have absolutely done. And if they don't know any different from turning around, they're not going to know.
Sure.
And kids sit cross-legged all the time. So them bending their knees or crossing their legs, they're not uncomfortable. They sit like that anyhow. That restraint system is the safest way to go.
So after two, you turn them around.
Yes.
And then what are the rules there?
So then you follow the car seat manufacturer's recommendations from that point, but they can be in a high back booster, sometimes up to 65 pounds or more. And it's based on age and weight and also height. You want to look at where the seatbelt hits the kid across the chest, across their waist. If it's choking them, they're not going to want to wear it. And the first thing they do is take that seatbelt and put it behind their head.
Of course.
Which obviously is not doing them any good. So, you know, the longer that they can stay at every stage of that car seat, the absolute better.
When do you just do the booster seat and you take away the back?
So you can do that at a minimum age of four. But again, if you can keep them in the high back booster seat, if they're short or skinny and the chair supports it, then keep them in the high back. But four would be the bare minimum where they're in their booster. And that's a bigger four-year-old. That's somebody who's tall, whose knees are falling over the edge of the seat properly, the seatbelt's hitting them where it should be while in the booster. But I would say if you can keep them in that high back booster till they're five or so, then keep doing it.
My son's six and he's still in the high back booster.
That's perfectly fine. All right, okay. That's and he probably knows no different.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, so he's
I just feel like it is a little more secure, but I just...
It absolutely is.
I feel like
because he has things around his head that are going to support his head if he's going back to back. And it's also about I'm sure you have a car that has like the side airbags and the curtains that come down. That's going to prevent him from getting smacked in the face at those because it's going to come between the seat and the window. So it'll block any kind of glass that's broken, but it will really create a pillow around them.
Well, and he loves to sleep, so he still falls asleep in the car.
Yeah.
And without the cushion, the pillow on the side, he would fall over the seatbelt.
And we tell parents that all the time, like, look, even if they meet the requirements for a booster, if you're going to go on a long trip, put the back on so that they do have that 5-point harness back so that if they do fall asleep, they're only drooping slightly. They're not going to be doubled over, hanging over a seatbelt.
How old are your kids?
I have a 4-year-old, a 1-year-old, and I'm a glutton for punishment.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
So not yet in school, but you do active shooter training in schools and other businesses. Yep. Did becoming a mom drive you to ensure that your children and all of the children really in the community are safe when they go to school?
Absolutely. I went to a meeting that had a lot of the superintendents from different school districts there, and I was given the stink eye to the Central Bucks people, making sure that, you know, they're on the same page that I am, because I want to make sure that they're teaching their kids the latest best practices and methods and not just being more fearful of change because of what the parents may think than really looking at the interest of the school, the kids, the teachers, and everybody that's inside. So absolutely.
After the shooting in Florida, it was interesting to see how some of the districts handled that and some of the letters that went out. You know, working in radio, of course, when parents aren't happy, they send stuff to us. So I saw a number of different letters, and there were some from the superintendents that were excellent. They did a great job addressing it and what their policy was and what the laws were and what they were doing to secure the schools. But then we got a few that were, you know, you kind of scratched your head when you read it and thought, this is a superintendent thinking.
Yeah. I had one school tell me that their method of telling the children to get away from the shooting was to go invisible. So I'm not sure if they're like big readers of Harry Potter and they all have like invisibility cloaks that they can just suddenly go invisible. But I'm not sure that that's a practice that the government or any agency supports.
So when you go into the school, are you talking to the teachers or are you talking to the students?
I first start with administrators to make sure that I know what their policies are, that I'm not going to teach them something that is completely different or would violate a policy. And then if they do need a policy change, we can talk about it then before it goes in front of the teacher so that we're all on the same sheet of music before I even go in and teach a single thing. We want our teachers to be able to act on their own, dial 911. They can leave the school premises. They can break anything and everything in the school if necessary to barricade a door or to save something. Because we still have schools where the teachers have to either ask for permission to call 911 or they have to call the school office first.
Really?
Or call a nurse first before they're even allowed to dial 911 on their own. So it seems silly to have to say it, but you do.
So you're speaking to the administrators and then you go in and speak to the teachers?
Yep. And then we'll talk to the teachers and we'll go through an entire program. The program that I've been using is called ALICE, which of course is an acronym for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, and Evacuate. And that is a program that I went and learned about a couple years ago now. And now several more people in Middletown Township Police Department have also gone as well. And it's just something that we find to have the best options available to the students and to the teachers and to the staff. And it's really more about keeping them safe, having a proactive approach, but also at the same time empowering the teachers and the students to make the best decisions for themselves.
So then do you eventually speak to the students or are the teachers then talking to their kids?
They get to talk to their kids.
Okay.
I get to give them the adult version and then they have to make it age appropriate. They do have to turn this information into something that these children can digest. And for some kids, it's not going to be talking about an active shooter. For some of these schools, they start at a pre-K program and they're 3 years old. Well, you're not going to talk to a 3-year-old about active shooter. You're going to have to figure out some different way to explain to them, hey, if you hear an alert or a drill, you need to listen to Mrs. So-and-so, and this is how we're going to do it. This is where we could go. We want to stay away from any programs that pigeonhole people into doing. You're always going to go down hallway A, and you're always going to go down stairwell B, and you're always going to end up on the front lawn of the school. We don't ever want kids and teachers to think that, because then they feel like they have one way to get out. There's millions of doors in schools, millions of windows at schools. There's lots of staircases and hallways. You don't ever want to tell people they have to do things one way. This is an options-based program.
Especially then if the bad guy is there.
Exactly. And that's part of this, is part of the alert piece of it is telling people, hey, this is where the active shooter is. This is what he has or she has. And it's giving real-time information. You're not spoiling anything for the shooter. They know who they are. They know where they are and where they're headed. But now you're telling other people that same information. Now they're able to make a better decision. Because if you just said somebody's in the lobby with a gun, where are they going? Which stairwell should I use? Should I stay? Should I go? You know, that's the biggest question. And if you're providing more information other than somebody has a gun, then you can make a good decision. So when we run drills, we purposely will give them certain information, and then the teachers and the students have to make the decision all on their own.
Do you run the drills with the schools?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you want to try and make that first drill very, everyone knows it's a drill, first of all, and you do it slowly, and you just want everybody to make that decision, and you want them to be successful at it. Part of it is empowering them to make them feel like, this is a decision I made, and we stuck with it, and this is how it went. The kids, they don't get enough credit for just how smart they are. The last drill I did was with a Catholic school that had three-year-olds up to eighth grade. And afterwards, they had a class of kindergartners that were upset and a little scared. But I went in there, I said, what's wrong? One little girl, she's like, I'm scared. I said, well, I am too. I would be very scared as a police officer. I'd be scared I can't help every single one of you, you know, as fast as I would need to. But what did you do? She said, well, I moved desks and I grabbed a book in case you came in here and I was going to hit you with it. I said, well, perfect. That's exactly what I want you to do. So even though you were fearful, you were scared, you were anxious, you worked through all of that. You worked as a team. You were cohesive. I had a boy tell me that they barricaded the door and they built steps up to their teacher's desk so that they could then get out the window. But he was sure to tell me, I'm the tallest kid in the class. I get to go out first because I have the longest arms. I can help everyone out the window. But these are 5 and 6 year olds. Yeah. So I would have never given a 5 or 6 year old that much credit. But they figured this out with their teachers and were able to verbalize their whole plans to me. And it was really amazing to see. It was emotional because I felt bad that this is something we have to teach, but it is.
It is. It's sad that it is something that we have to teach, but absolutely it's needed now.
I mean, you teach fire drills and all kinds of other safety drills.
Sure.
This absolutely has to be part of the rotation because it needs to be done over and over and over again. And yes, what we're teaching now versus traditional lockdown is very different. So kids who are younger and are going to come through the grades learning a different method, they're not going to know any different. But kids who might be in eighth, ninth grade and have only ever been taught traditional lockdown, that's all that they know. So this is a very different program for them. And so teaching them is kind of like a learning curve. Traditional lockdown was never meant to be used the way it's been used. Because why would you stay in one place, all huddled together, sitting quietly, waiting? So part of the training, the first 5 minutes, is really what convinced me that it wasn't what was necessary. The teacher told us, okay, go into traditional lockdown. We hit the lights, we got under our chairs, we sat quietly, and he came in with an airsoft gun and shot every single one of us within moments in the back. And he's like, okay, none of you survived.
Okay.
But it was so true because these kids are taught to be helpful to the shooter. Sit quietly. Don't say anything. Don't argue with them. Be quiet and just wait. When you tell them to cluster, how much talent does it take to shoot into a group of people and hurt somebody?
Are all of the townships following this guideline?
I think every school district has their own policy manuals that they follow. I don't know what everybody is doing because even individual schools, especially private schools, they can have their own policies as well.
So it's not across the board.
This it is not. Okay. A lot of people are using ALICE and are teaching their teachers and their students this ALICE program. However, there's all different ways to go about it. FEMA teaches run, hide, fight. So that's, again, another options-based scenario that you can use. But, you know, we want our schools to be doing the very best thing that we know. And so this has been it.
You work with the SWAT team.
I do.
What do you do for them?
A negotiator.
If there's some sort of barricade situation, you're on the outside on the phone trying to talk to the person on the inside.
Yes. We have a bunch of negotiators for the team, and we will try and make contact, whether it's by phone, text message, hailing, screaming, whatever it takes to try and make contact with that person to try and convince them to come out in a peaceful way. And, you know, we don't want anybody to get hurt. And we try to talk them through whatever crisis that they're in to end it peacefully.
Now, is SWAT just in your township or is it the whole county?
Bucks County is broken up into different sections for SWAT teams. So depending on what township you belong to will depend on what SWAT team you're a part of.
I would imagine you had to go through some sort of training.
Yes, the FBI offers a 40-hour class on negotiations. And then we do tons of training all throughout the year, doing scenario-based things to just really try and aggravate you and get you into that hot seat where you're continually practicing your skills of active listening and communicating. And how are we going to work together with the actual SWAT operators, guys that, with all the guns and shields and all that kind of stuff? How are we going to work together to make this happen, that everyone gets out in one piece?
So you're specifically a negotiator?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There are other people that will, say, enter the house?
Oh, yes. Those are the SWAT operators. They're the ones that, you know, take action when necessary. But on the other end, you know, we're the ones usually, like I said, on the phone or texting or however we can communicate with that person.
Now, I know you're the community resource officer. Are you on the street as well?
Yes, when I'm not pregnant.
Not right now. Right. Okay, when you're not pregnant.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Because a lot of our community complaints are traffic or stop signs or school zones or, you know, whatever those things are. I also am on bike patrol, so I have my own police bicycle so we can ride around. Anything and everything that can get me out of the office, absolutely.
If you could give one bit of advice to the listeners that are listening to the show today, what would you say to them?
Active shooter is definitely important, and it's a task and it's a learning opportunity no matter where you go. Whether you've been to a restaurant 500 times, you've been to the mall or Target 7,000 times, you should go in there with a new set of eyes from this point forward. Where are my exits? How would I get out if I had to? If something happened while I was at the back of the store, where would I go? And start to consider things that you wouldn't have before. Yes, would I use an emergency exit? Absolutely. Would I break a window? Absolutely. But how many times do you just walk blindly into the mall like, oh, I just need to go to this store, that store, and then something kicked off? Were you really thinking about how could I possibly get out? And especially when I have my kids with me, I want to know, where am I going? What's my closest exit? How would I get there? And really use a different set of eyes when you're at these places that you go to all the time and you just become really, really complacent with your environment.
Great advice. Melissa, thank you so much for coming by today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to find out more about the Middletown Township Police Department, which is in Bucks County, and any of the events that they might be having, you can visit their Facebook page. Just search MTPD. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm Kathy Romano. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.